Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings. Greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we're blessed to stay alive in this most mundane and yet paradoxically existential of moments. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio. And we humbly assert, as well as aggressively promote the idea where the inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio, we call ourselves Soul Class. It happens to be Soul Class number 672. Conversations from the Tree of Life, Part 6. Blessed is our eternal Creator. Shalom, peace, and baruch blessings upon the human family experience. With Creator's help, we're now broadcasting live on December 10th, 2017, live from Turtle Island, equals the USA, equals AKA Unified Soul Actualization. We had been planning to bring on co-host, telemedia prolific lecturer, Jerome Sage Butler. However, there's been a technical glitch from here to the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica. And still, we'll encourage anyone to call in for the next half hour or so. We're going to do a contracted form of today's presentation because only I'll be speaking, as it appears so far. Of course, if anyone wants to join in on this organic conversation, you can call in at 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones in a peaceful and pleasant manner. The tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel and Children of Noah, collaborating to remove hatred and jealousy and all forms of competition not needed. Sila Media, Jerome Sage Butler, Jamaica, the Diamond of the Caribbean, mental health, mental balance, health and wellness. And as we begin today's humble presentation, you are listening to Brother by Zushia, featuring the wonderful guitarist C. Lance Baum. And oh brother, there is so much to talk about. Well, blessed souls, as I mentioned, that we originally had planned to have on Sila Media prolific lecturer Jerome Sage Butler, but unfortunately a technical glitch ensued and we're going to have to pass on that, and hopefully in the coming weeks we'll have to try to have him back on the program. Blessed souls, I want to talk to you about an issue that has been a part of my life the past 20 years. And it's something that affects many members of society over here in Western civilization, namely North America. The idea of the human experience, many times the bitter human experience of mental illness, which in itself is a painful matter to approach because we as human beings are cognitive by our very nature. And with that being said, when we try to process our world for that which is unique to the human living experience, our cognitive faculties, there can be blockages coming from within due to many factors, far more than I can mention on any one program, because if we have 7 billion plus human beings living on this blessed earth, as we do, each human being has their unique state of being brought into the creation by virtue of his or her parents becoming one flesh. The intent they had in bringing that life into this world, the blessings of the Most High Creator, that this fetus shall become a human, shall become a baby, shall become a small child, shall become a maturing child, shall become an adolescent, shall become a teenager, young adult, a matured adult, and hopefully an elder, man or woman, to pass on his or her wisdom on to the younger and future generations. With that being said, there's a question of what type of food intake is he or she accessing as a little child. Is it a peaceful environment that he or she is being raised in, or is it an environment of contentiousness? Is it an environment where there is a solid family structure? Or is the developing child growing up in a one-parent household, or even in a no-parent household, but rather is being raised by an uncle, an aunt, a grandfather, a grandmother, together or separate? Or is the child, so to speak, becoming a ward of the state? Some individuals, when they go through the process of becoming a ward of the state, generally speaking, being raised in a children's and adolescent residence, are very quick to point out that they feel a certain sense of injustice, that why can't they be raised by their own flesh and blood, meaning their parents or relatives, grandparents, whoever it may be. And there's an anger generated. And that anger is a type of energy that if the people, the significant others in that young child, adolescent, young adult, if they have the tools to implement a conversation with the developing human being, that they can take that anger and help them to subdue or tap into that energy in the most efficient manner, to use that energy of anger and use it for something productive in terms of their potential to develop as a fully actualized human being. Now, what makes the process even more delicate and complicated is that we're talking about a variety of, and it's a good thing, because in the multitudes of the masses is the glory of the king, the different cultural expectations also weigh down or uplift, according to the experience of that person who is a ward of the state, can help them develop his or her character and become contributing positive forces in society. On the other hand, there are many human beings raised in a nuclear family or a non-nuclear family where they have been exposed to different forms of trauma. Now, I'm not going to give you the clinical definition of trauma, blessed souls, but rather those experiences in life which are processed by our cognitive features and our emotional features, our spiritual features, something that happened to, it could happen to any human being based on some experience with their sense of hearing, their sense of seeing, their sense of smelling, their sense of eating, and their sense of tactile contact, touching, that at a delicate point of his or her development stunts their ability to process that moment. And that moment, because something which is a constant reminder of that event, which makes it very hard for the person to go beyond that life event, whatever it may have been. It might have been, I mean, as a parent, I, you know, I'm being quite brutally honest, if I got into a disagreement with my wife, I can recall the children recoiling, and later, in years later, they would tell me that, you know, Abba, Father, when we saw you arguing with Ima, we ran into another room, we got scared. And that type of observation made by the child could have been at 4 or 5 years old, 6 years old, 8 years old, whatever, can be something that he or she lived with the rest of their life and serve as a stumbling block towards his or her development. So what happens is the person goes on, they become more and more independent. Again, we're talking, let's now in the context of a child, a young adult, a teenager, let's say, you can call them as well, who has trouble adapting to other human relationships outside of, say, their family environment. So what happens? Instead of getting more integrated into the socialization process, which has its pitfalls and its moments of excitation and moments of somewhere in between, just the normal day-to-day living experience, that instead of embracing the new life experience, they're still living with that previous life event, which is stunting their sensitivities, holding them back from developing. Because aside from, as I would, you know, I guess this is my culture, we are here to grow in our relationship with Creator and other human beings, and we humbly suggest from a Torah biblical perspective with the oral and written traditions of Israel, that when we talk about development, how could development take place without, first of all, some sort of education for the child, each one according to his or her level, to become sensitive to 5 senses, as I mentioned before, I believe. The sense of hearing, the sense of seeing, the sense of smelling, the sense of tasting, and the sense of touching. But what happens if a child is deprived of, say, like the sense of hearing? They're deaf. Or the sense of seeing? They're blind. There has to be, if the child is to develop, a compensation, an overcompensating, from the other 4 senses, which are not damaged. A person who's deaf, so they still can tap into their sense of hearing and their sense of touching and smelling and tasting. But they can't hear. Yes, they can. I'm sure they can put their hand up to some sort of machinery and feel the vibrations, but they don't hear the sound that those vibrations are generating. But with a person who has been opened up to a certain situation, which for them was a negative life experience, what do they do when that life event experience causes trauma? Which again, I'm not defining in the clinical sense, but giving it a on-the-street perspective of stunting their growth and yet they live still in that moment of trauma, whether consciously or subconsciously. Well, I can tell you this, Blessed Soul, I was going to share this with Jerome Sage, and hopefully we will at a future program. I recall in 1982, when I was living at my parents' house, and a young man from Japan was married to a French woman, came to my parents' house. They had actually walked from, I believe, Minnesota to New York City to participate, which would eventually be, maybe the numbers have been topped already, but 1982 was the largest peacetime rally in New York City in protest of the nuclear arms proliferation between Russia and the United States of America. And at that time, I was not sure about my future in terms of what type of career I'd like to develop, because I wasn't so spiritually oriented, although I was socially, I had an interest in social matters, justice, but I didn't perceive that as a spiritual experience. Now I do. To me, I see spirit. I try to see spirit in everything, whether it be the mundane or the holy, as you might call it, even in the profane, to shun, hopefully, the profane. But this young Japanese man, who happened to be a Japanese Rasta, turned me on to then the late, great Bob Marley's last recorded album, which was released before his passing, 1981. And I was taken by the following lyrics, which I think apply so much to my work in the mental health field. But I can't use these words to my clients as much as using other forms of exploration. But for me, it was an eye-opener to the opportunities that eventually would lay before my doorstep of destiny. And these are the words. In this life, oh sweet life, we're coming in from the cold. We're coming in, coming in, coming in, coming in. Coming in, coming, coming, coming in from the cold. It's you, it's you, it's you I'm talking to. Well, you, it's you, you, it's you, you I'm talking to. Why do you look so sad and forsaken? When one door is closed, don't you know other or another is open? When I heard those lyrics, Blessed Souls, at the tender age of 20 years old, which was 35 and a half years ago, I thought to myself, you know, this is a totally different type of message which I hadn't heard in the other music that I was so fascinated by at that particular stage of my life. I was more into socially activist-minded type of music. You know, I didn't really like the frivolous stuff. And this opened me up. And so today, when I work with my clients, I don't ask them why they're sad and depressed. I ask them more of a general question, how are you feeling today? And if they say they are feeling sad and depressed, then I try to explore with them what options that they have to try to get out of that feeling sad and depressed. Sounds easy? No, it's not. Because also there is this idea that before you engage in such a conversation with a person who's feeling sad and depressed, or let's say psychotic or manic, or is afflicted with a horrible, horrible type of severe mental illness called personality disorder, you have to engender a type of empathy, sympathy, brotherly love, or sisterly love towards the person you're directing the question to, so they feel that more than the conversation that's about to transpire between you and the person you're trying to, spirit you're trying to lift up, you are there for them. You are there to support them. You are there to give them a helping hand if you have the blessing to help them materially. If you hopefully we all have the abilities if we want to excavate themselves out of ourselves, whether that excavation is like, you know, just merely like a coal which holds the flame within that glowing ember, but you just see like a mere shimmer of orange on the coal, but if you blow on it, the fire comes flaming forth. Or like a Flintstone level of awareness, self-awareness, how we can empathize for others. If you strike the rock, if you strike yourself deep inside to produce that spark of empathy and sympathy for another human being. You can do it if you want to. They have to feel, the person at the recipient end of your conversation, the person who you are, who obviously is sad and depressed, and usually a person who is sad and depressed isolates himself or herself from society. In the case with the people I work with, they like to oversleep, sometimes 10 to 16 plus hours a day. And sometimes what they will do is they will bring up an event where they were hurt badly by someone recently, as they perceived it. And it reminds them of when they were treated badly by, say, someone earlier in their lifetime, where life experiences made a much deeper impression that they could last a lifetime. Now, of course, there are many nuances to this type of, you know, scenario that I'm presenting to you, Blessos, and no one scenario is the cookie cutter that which all shapes of human dialogue and human experience must go through. No, there's, again, for 7 billion plus people, there's 7 different type of unique cookie cutters, as we have from the Israelite oral Torah tradition, that, you know, when you make a penny, you need a penny mold. When you make a nickel, you need a nickel mold. When you need a dime, you need a dime mold. When you need a quarter, you need a quarter mold. But yet, original man, original human being, was created in such a way that there was no such mold, yet from original human being is the entire human family experience. And of course, with his wife, original woman, Adam and Eve, as we call them biblically, Adam and Chava in the Hebrew, Lashna Kodesh. So, I'm just throwing out some ideas with you, blessed souls, and this idea of mental health. Now, the person who is suffering from some sort of what we call in America a severe mental illness many times feels stigmatized because they're being associated with just that feature of their human experience. That portion doesn't necessarily have to dominate 100%. And generally, I haven't seen any person that I've worked with in the last almost 20 years who is only bipolar. They have their moments where they're not bipolar. But unfortunately, because of this type of affliction, their persona is dominated a good portion of the day, or significantly enough, that they are deemed as living with a disability, which precludes them, at least up until this point in time, of holding a steady job or a steady relationship with a significant other, or proper bonding with parents, siblings, friends in society. And they feel very much alone because really their relationship is with that traumatic event or that series of traumatic events. Sometimes it's one event which can traumatize a person. Sometimes it can be a series of events which repeat themselves because they are raised in an atmosphere which was neglectful and abusive. We also see that sometimes the experience comes from within, as we saw in last week's Torah portion, where the head butler who poured the drinks for Pharaoh and the head baker who baked the bread for Pharaoh had dreams that perplexed them and made them feel sad, and came along the righteous Joseph and he interpreted their dreams. And in this week's Torah portion, Pharaoh had dreams. Paro. And this you can go by learning more about in the book of Genesis. Now, in ancient cultures, and leading up until probably the last couple hundred years, when there was something that traumatized a human being, they were the parents to comfort the developing human being. Excuse me. They were the siblings, the grandparents, the uncles, the aunts, members of the community. They were faith-based or tribally based, clan-based. There were the spiritual mentors, the priests, the muftis, the rabbis, the shamans, wherever they were. But since there's been a breakdown, unfortunately, here, very much so in Western society, the breaking down of self-contained supportive structures, systems had to be created I'm not going to go into the history of if there was a economic motivating factor which had guided the initial attempts to create mental health systems. I mean, there were sanatoriums, psychiatric wards, now outpatient clinics, now we have residences. I'm not going to question what the intent was, because I do know from my interacting with workers outside even the own agency that I work in, that most people that get in this field are very sincere. But we feel very frustrated because the system is so inundated with rules and regulations originally created that there shouldn't be mismanagement of funds or abuse and neglect of the very people that we are supposed to service. But at the same time, too, because of what were the expectations of such social service systems, the expectations were so low for the populations being served. I can only speak for those who I've been working with in New York City, Brooklyn area, that unfortunately another type of stigma developed within clientele that I have observed in the last almost 20 years is they feel they can't do anything more than what they're doing. And again, it's kind of like an escapism, but it was basically reinforced by the system. But now in the last several years, there's this idea of a client-based value system where people are being encouraged to have some sort of vision, which is called a long-term recovery vision, where people are being asked to pictorialize where they would like to see themselves in, say, like 6 months from now or more. And what, so to speak, baby steps can he or she take to make to actualize their potential, even though they are still battling, which many of them must go for psychotherapy services on a weekly basis. Some, I even know some individuals, they go for more than once a week psychotherapeutic services. But again, all this has transpired because something happened at very sensitive points of their lives where he or she could not be empowered by those closest to them, by faith or by culture or even bloodlines, that they could not be helped. What I'm trying to do, blessed souls, and I don't know, hopefully I had some sort of success in these few moments, was to, so to speak, create a framework for future discussions with Jerome Sage Butler, who will give a perspective from the Caribbean, from the diamond of the Caribbean. And may this all manifest in a way of a havachad, one love, gorlachad, one destiny for all of us, bedarchinom darchisham, in a pleasant and peaceful way. And I have to remember everyone, because I am that international, local, cyberspace, Nudnik Gudnik, Don Zusia Goodman, to remind everyone, we've got to be good. I've got to be good. You've got to be good. Because Atev Tov Lehetiv, the nature of the good to do good, and our Creator, who is the source of all goodness, put us down here on this earth. And also a big shout out to my brother in arms, soul, and in speech and action, good works down in the Diamond Caribbean, Jerome Sage Butler. Hopefully we won't have this technical glitch the next time we try to connect. And I know this coming Tuesday will be his Earth Day birthday, so I humbly and assertively bless you, Jerome Sage, that you should be strong and go from strength to strength as you prepare for your next level of your Earth Day birthday. And then just to conclude with a teaching from Lubavitcher Rebbe, every birthday a person merits to celebrate is a reminder from the Creator that you are needed in this creation, because that's why you're meriting to get to your next level of life, the next year in your life. Because if you weren't, given that means either one's time is up, but at the same time, that one has made it to the next year, one's birthday, is potent testimony, as I'm paraphrasing from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that the creation will be lacking if you were not in the world. So I'm going to end off with a song I played in recent one of the programs called Golden Crown by Rogers Park. Enjoy, everyone. Take care. Thank you.
come, my love, to a place where I will find. Come, my love, where the garden sets our minds. Inside into your world.